Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday morning and you're with your boys. Time to rise and shine and talk some sports.
Booyah!
Real Sports Talk Radio, live right now, on the air right now. Jose Padilla, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Randy. What's up?
And it is now, I guess it's time to talk a little sports and let everybody know our opinions of what's going on in the sports world. A real quiet week of sports. And what I mean quiet, like, it's supposed to be the NBA trade deadline, and that was a whimper. Spring training is starting with not a lot of fanfare. And then we have the combine going on. So there's some news, but not like a lot that's going to make you want to say, this is the story we have to talk about. Real quick, if you want to contact the show today, we'll be discussing a lot of fun topics, 760-283-0846. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/realsportstalkradio. Jose is on Facebook. So you can always find him and talk with him and yell at him because he deserves to be yelled at times. And then you can find us on Twitter at AngryJose15 and at RZelliaBSP. I'm going to change my Twitter handle because I think it's just Randy at BSP would be an easier Twitter handle to find.
Whatever floats your boat, dude. Whatever floats your boat.
Well, so there's so many things we want to get started with, and you know, I guess we should start from the beginning of the week and work our way to now. So let's see if we should work from now to work our way back to last Sunday. I'm going to give you the option.
Why don't we just start from the beginning and we'll go on from there?
Okay, so we're going to go from last Sunday to now. Okay.
Yes.
Last Sunday we had the NBA All-Star Game. And I watched it a little bit. You know, as much as I'm a basketball NBA enthusiast, and I love the NBA, I cover the NBA, as much as I watched the game, it was one of those, like, okay. You know, a lot of the things that you see, nice dunks and little, you know, dribbling the ball through Chris Bosh's legs, these are things that we've seen through the years over time. And it was just, to me, it was a very underwhelming All-Star game. Chris Paul cemented himself as one of the top point guards, if not the best point guard in the NBA. And proved it on the big stage. And, Jose, I say to you, are we now at a point where they have to do something to shape up the All-Star game in the NBA?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's very easy to look great when everyone is half-assing it, and then Chris Bosh is complete-assing it. By the way, I never realized that dribble between your legs, I didn't realize that there was a term for it. As I found out, Chris Bosh got nutmegged 3 separate times. You didn't know there was a term. Did you know there was a term for that?
No, I did not, because, listen, you know me, I'm not really a child of the streets. I don't really know the lingo. I just know, I thought maybe he got got.
That's good. No, I played street ball as long as I played, like, you know, recreational ball, but I have never heard that term ever used, ever. I've never heard it on a street court. I've never heard it on a regular court. So That was just someone clever at ESPN, most likely, or who came up with that. But, listen, the game is what the game is. No one wants to play defense. It's all about offense. There's just nothing that can be done. I mean, I don't know what you want to do to fix the game. I mean, it just is what it is. Like I said to you before, and I think we're both in agreement on this, when it comes to games like this, they're not for the real hardcore NBA fan. These are for the people who just like watching 2-minute offense happen for a full 48 minutes of basketball.
Okay, I think that's fair. You know, listen, I like LeBron James. I like watching some of these guys. My biggest problem with the game this past weekend was you knew that at the end of the day, the only question was if it came down to the final shot, whether what was going to happen with LeBron James. And for the fact of the matter is, the day after the All-Star game, all over SportsCenter was, what do you think? Kobe Bryant blocking LeBron James. at the end of the day, it's not that big of a deal.
She did it a couple of times.
You know, that's true, too. Again, at the end of the day, it's not that, it wasn't that big of a deal. And the game itself was okay. It wasn't the best quality basketball. And this, I think, goes back to the conversations we were having last week with Jay and Kenny Anderson about fixing the NBA, the quality of basketball. You know, if you look back at the, like, 93, 94, 95, 96 All-Star games there, listen, again, the guys don't take this fully serious because it's a fun game. It's an exhibition for the fans.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you saw a level of competitiveness. I don't think that was really there. And by the way, I think the only other news was I had reported that earlier in the week that there was Tim Duncan and Dwight Howard had built a friendship up, and with all everything that's been going on for free agency, Dwight Howard, Duncan was going to try and lure Howard to the Spurs to be his successor, and that went down with the tubes with what happened with Popovich and Howard. So
that was great, by the way. You know what? Since we are talking about the All-Star game, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up. Again, just for a quick discussion, we could probably elaborate on it later if you want.
So everything All-Star now, let's get out, because that was Sunday. We're going to move down Sunday to Monday.
Yeah, so to me, the biggest story that came out of the All-Star game was not the game itself. It was all the media attention that came from it. Now, this is something, as we all know, last week was somehow it all coincided with the celebration of Michael Jordan's 50th birthday. Which I don't know who planned that. I don't know how it worked out. Maybe just God hates me. I don't know. But all that being said, we all got into the whole thing about, is LeBron James better than Michael Jordan? Who is there anyone who could ever come up to Michael Jordan's, you know, greatness? So one of the things that was said, this is on Michael Jordan, when they were asking him, you know, who's better, because it came out to be a whole thing with LeBron and Kobe. You know, Jordan said, listen, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically, you know, they're both great in their own ways, but for me, five always beats one. So,
yeah, I agree with that.
So that happened, you know, that gets said. So then LeBron, because of course, you know, this goes out to him like sheer moments later when they're asking him about this. So LeBron's response to this, and again, I'm just paraphrasing, but the basic point of the matter was, rings do not define the person, and they don't define me. They don't define me. Well, here's my question, and I pose this to you and to LeBron if he was listening to this show. If rings don't define who you are, why did you go out of your way to go to Miami?
That's a very good question. Post that question on Facebook as well. Listen. First off, you know LeBron's listening to the show. Second of all, I do agree with you. I think that he's backtracking. I think in his own mind, and I think, remember, you and I are a little bit different. You know, the NBA right now is not geared towards our demographic. It's geared to the younger demographic. So I just want to point that out first. We, just like the older people before us, had the opportunity of watching the NBA through the Bird Magic era and then the Jordan era. You know, we saw the tail end of the Magic Bird era there. And then the people before that saw Kareem. Then there's, you know, the Russells before that and the Chamberlains. We have been lucky enough to watch and see the growth of Michael Jordan turning from this guy's never going to win a championship because he's too flashy, to becoming NBA champion, to becoming the greatest of all time. LeBron had that same criticism. The thing is, it's two totally type of different players. I think if you're going to compare anybody to Michael Jordan in the NBA, it's Kobe Bryant, because he's got the same demeanor. You know, you're going to have to kill him to beat him type of attitude.
I don't know if I agree with that as far as LeBron goes. I don't think there's anyone in any sport, and I'm including Derek Jeter, that has that will to want to win more. I think Kobe Bryant would die on the court if he had to.
Right.
I don't see that with most of the NBA superstars, let alone regular NBA players. I think Kobe Bryant is the one guy that just leaves it all out.
Well, yeah, and that's the way Jordan played, too. Jordan left everything out on the floor.
Well, but the thing with Jordan, Jordan was more of a gambler, and that's another. But that's another issue. You know, that's another issue entirely.
Right. But
I think that has more to do with his gambling senses than his will to win. I mean, listen, I don't know anything that I don't know if Kobe Bryant is capable of playing any other sport but basketball. We all know Jordan can't play any other sport but basketball because we've seen his baseball prowess, and it's not that good.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, we drifted away from my original point because that was my fault. I did it. We grew up watching Jordan, and then we were also watching LeBron. We went from watching LeBron struggle in Cleveland, even though it took a team that was less talented than the team he's in with Miami to the NBA Finals. We watched him grow, and now he is. You can honestly say he's the best overall player in the league. That's fine. The difference here is Michael made everybody around him better in a way that, you know, he made them believe. I don't think LeBron makes those other guys believe that, you know, that they're going to be the best they are because of him. Like, they know, like, you can ask Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr was a journeyman before he got to the Bulls. He was with Cleveland for a couple of years and was not doing anything. He was released by Cleveland, went to Chicago, and he's playing, then he plays with Michael Jordan. He's put in a position to hit big shots. Now, Steve Kerr was a pure shooter. But then you have guys like Luke Longley. You have guys like James Edwards, Bill Winnington. Who has LeBron made? You know, this, you can almost make the same argument with, and this is, you're going to yell at me when I say this, but you have to let me finish my point. Look at a guy like Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd makes people rich. He made Kenyon Martin rich, made Mikey Moore rich, Richard Jefferson rich. It's like you take those guys away from that superstar that made them better than what they were. What star has LeBron James made?
Well, let me just say something about Kenyon Martin. Kenyon Martin was the first pick in the draft. So let's not go too far with it. I'll give you the other guys. But let's not get too crazy. Remember, Kenyon Martin broke his leg before that year's draft. Kenyon Martin, if it wasn't for that broken leg, would have probably came into the NBA as an NCAA champion on that Cincinnati Bearcat team that basically could not be beaten. But Kenyon Martin having a broken leg, you know, ended all thoughts of that. But Kenyon Martin was a great player before that.
Right,
you know, he went to Denver because of a money issue, and the talent wasn't there as much. But he was still a very good player. So I don't want to hear the bad talk about Kenyon Martin because he's a lot better than what you give him credit for there. The other guys, yes, you're right about that. Here's what I want to ask you, though, and then we should move on from this topic and we can discuss it later. At the end of the day, who's the better player, Dwayne Wade or Scottie Pippen?
I don't think that's much of an argument, and you're going to yell at me. I think Scottie Pippen's a much better player.
All right, listen. I know Wade already had won a title, but he won a second one because of LeBron. And let's be fair, too, though. Michael Jordan, for all his greatness, he always had Scottie Pippen with him, and then he always had a third great player, whether it was Horace Grant or, you know, then Dennis Rodman at his later stage, who filled a niche that no one else could fill. LeBron James, for all the warts that he has about him that we all try to, like, poke holes at, more you than me, he took a Cleveland team that had no business even being in the NBA at that point, and they went to a finals. I don't know about you, but if that's not making people better, I don't know what is then.
I'm going to bring up this point of it, and then I think we started away from the Jordan LeBron.
Well, it all comes in together, though. It all gets to that point.
Here's what I have to remind you also, and this is where I defend LeBron. You know, Michael Jordan went to North Carolina and then came to the NBA and took his hard knocks, and people said, you know, LeBron had a win by this age because that's when Jordan won his first ring. I think what we're forgetting about, and this is why I made the comment about Kobe Bryant is the closest thing to Jordan that we've seen in this era. I think that LeBron has more of the qualities of Magic Johnson, where he does everything. You know, he passes the ball, rebounds the ball. Jordan was a scoring assassin, and he would come up in the clutchest of points. Even if he's shooting 3 for 16 in the final 2 minutes of the game, Jordan will still find a way, as long as the Bulls are close, to come back and beat you. The reality of it is, and I know Skip Bayless says this all the time, he's only seen LeBron do 2 walk-off wins. But at the same time, I think it's time that we finally admit that LeBron James might be the best all-around player, maybe, obviously in the NBA right now, but maybe one of the top 5-10 NBA players of all time. But he doesn't have the same determination as Jordan does as far as wanting to win in the clutch and being that assassin. I think we still want him to be that assassin, but he'll never be the assassin.
I see what you're saying. To me, I don't get into all that stuff. At the end of the day, as long as you do what you're supposed to do and you win, I don't care, about all that and nonsense. But let's move on, because we could do a whole show about this, and we really don't want to do that. So what's next on the agenda, my friend?
So that was Sunday, and so that was the final word about the All-Star game. And it was a very lackluster NBA All-Star weekend for the NBA. And around this time, too, we were gearing up for spring training, and obviously the local stories with the Mets and the Yankees in this area took precedence. The Mets are going in with a huge question mark, as Andy McCullough said to us a couple of weeks ago on our show, that, what are we really going to be talking about with the Mets? Yep, a couple of good prospects, and, we're looking forward to watching David Wright play all season long. But you were telling me earlier in the day, obviously the news with Johan Santana broke. But before we go into Santana, you said that there was some other Mets news that you wanted to touch on real quick.
Well, again, yesterday they had their first game against, of all things, the Washington Nationals yesterday. And, that was Steve Strasburg pitching. And one of the additions from this offseason, Sean Markham, was making his debut. Sean Markham was just working on stuff, so there was no big deal there. Strasburg got roughed up a little bit in the game yesterday, but to me, the real story of yesterday's game was the outcome of the pitching performance after Sean Markham, which started off with Zach Wheeler, who, by now, if you don't know who Zach Wheeler is, Zach Wheeler was the prize pickup in the Carlos Beltran deal a couple years ago. Well, let me just tell you, if you have not seen this kid pitch before and you weren't sure, this guy is going to be the real deal. For people who think, myself included, about Matt Harvey, who I think is going to be a big-time player for the Mets in years to come, this kid Wheeler might be just as good, if not better. He just has something about him that just I don't know what to say, but if you're a Mets fan, as I am, if things work out well and everything happens to your full potential for these guys, the Mets are going to have a nice 1-2 punch at the top of that rotation for years to come. But what was even more surprising was what came out after Wheeler. Corey Mazzoni came out, and I've heard mixed things about him. I saw him pitch yesterday. The guy looked fantastic. Another kid that they had in the minors for a while, Darren Grofsky, he came out, he pitched well. Parnell finished it off and actually looked decent. Parnell's going to be the closer most likely to start the year if Francisco doesn't come out. So what I'm getting at is basically for all you people who cover the Mets or, who watch the Mets and you have such a horrid opinion of the team, there is hope coming very soon. And I know people don't want to admit to it or want to accept it because I think it's very nice and it's very easy to bash on the Mets. But there's a lot of good fortune coming around this team's way. And I think I'm going to say very sooner rather than later.
And Johan Santana is on the shelf until probably not even may not pitch the spring. They're saying.
You know what? At this point, I'm not worried about Santana. To me, Santana's not a guy I'm worried about as far as being a part of this team. For any significant part. The quicker we can move on from this, the better. I'm actually hoping that Santana's just healthy enough to pitch that he can show that he's worth something so the Mets can get a decent trade offer for him. That's my opinion as far as Santana goes.
Well, I think at the end of the day, you have to do, it's an investment. He was the prize pickup for the Mets from the Twins. He was he was the Twins' number one guy for years. And with the, it was, they said it was almost like a coup when they got him. And I'll tell you, these big-named guys that come into the Mets from other teams, a lot of them don't seem to work out. I think Beltran really underachieved for them, and people always remember the strike-free looking. I know that haunts you.
You know what it is with Beltran, and there are people like that, but if you ask real in the know, Beltran performed well. Yeah, he had the one bad at-bat. We all know that. But that at-bat might have caused more damage than any other at-bat in the history of baseball. I mean, but for the most part, I've always felt that Beltran performed well. To me, you know, this team has gone into a sort of tailspin since that at-bat. It's been a black cloud that's been hanging over the team for a long time, and hopefully we start, you know, as a Mets fan, I'm hoping they're starting to get out of it. But I will say this about the Santana deal. None of those guys that they traded to get him, I think, are even in the Minnesota Twins organization anymore.
No, that's true.
And I think one of them actually is back with the Mets.
Well, here's the other part of it, Jose. And we have, now we're going to move on from the Mets. I think that we're now at a point where the Mets, you know, they said they're out of financial issues and financial worries. They now are at a good point where they can now move on and see what else they can go out and get for the money that they can go out and spend. There's not a lot out there. So baseball is the only sport where I really think you can really use your prospects to good use. Whereas in basketball, you know, the basketball doesn't have a minor league. That's a good minor league anyway. The NHL uses it okay, but the NFL has no real minor league prospect place. Baseball is the only place to really, really have it, too. That's where you're developing your stars. I think the Mets are absolutely doing it the right way. The Yankees are now feeling the effects of the years and years of spending coming back to bite them in the butt now. And now, like you've always said, the Yankees are now going to feel what it's like to be outside the playoffs looking in on a consistent basis. I think those days are coming.
I agree with you on that. I definitely agree with you on that aspect. What's going to be a telltale situation with that is what they're going to do with Robinson Cano. I mean, this guy's getting close to 30. He wants a 10-year contract. I mean, who in their right mind signs anyone to a 10-year deal anymore with the way that those deals all work out now? And I can say this right now, and this is not me being hyperbole here. There is no one in the Yankee farm system right now that's ready to come up and replace Robinson Cano. Although, to be fair, we didn't even know about Robinson Cano when he first came up. So maybe that might be being a little bit preemptuous, but I know right now, as far as the Yankees are concerned, they don't have no one that could replace him if he left. So there are going to be some hard times if they don't shore the situation up.
Well, real quick also, Justin Verlander is looking for more money. Which, you know, not for nothing. Justin Verlander wants to become Major League Baseball's first $200 million pitcher, preferably in Detroit. No pitcher is worth $200 million. There's no athlete that's worth $200 million. Okay, let's go there. If that goes, you know, we're later on in the show, we're going to talk about overrated athletes. Justin Verlander will go to the top of that list if he gets a $200 million contract in my eyes.
Listen, we were told many, many years ago there was no player worth $1 million. And then Jose Canseco broke all those things, and then we had $100 million. Listen, you are worth what someone is willing to pay you, and there will always be someone that is willing to go there. If Mark Cuban was in baseball, I guarantee you, someone would be making well over $200 million.
Agreed.
If someone's, there's always someone that's willing to do it. There's always going to be a guy or the board that's going to be willing to make that splash. A few years ago, that was the Mets. That was the Mets, not that long ago. I mean, people think it was ages. It wasn't that long ago. It was literally like 8 years ago. So, Justin Verlander, aside from the fact that we don't think anyone should be making that kind of money, listen, if he says he wants $200 million, He's going to get it from someone. It doesn't matter who. It doesn't have to be the Tigers, but someone's going to give it to him.
I agree. No, I agree with you on that. And I'm, if he's able to get the money, good for him. I hate to say it like that, but if he's able to get the money, good for him. But at the same time.
Let me ask you a question. If you owned the team and you were in desperate need of pitching and Justin Verlander was there, you going to give him that money?
No.
Even if he was the best pitcher available?
I'm not giving him $200 million.
So that's just it's a principal thing then.
What did you say?
So it's just principal at that point then.
Yeah, it's principal. Listen, you know what? I know there's no salary cap in baseball, but you have to set limits. And stop,
you know. Basically $20 million a year is what you're basically saying. You just don't think someone is worth $20 million a year.
No, it's just, look, do you think A-Rod's worth $20 million a year?
Well, let me ask you this. You thought Jordan was worth $30 million a year?
I think with Jordan, yes. I think that's a different argument.
But look what Verlander's done. Verlander's just as accomplished as Jordan.
I think it's a touchy conversation. It's two different conversations we're having right now. I think.
No, but
go ahead.
Are we talking because is it the age, or you just don't think anyone is worth that money?
I think at the end of the day, you have to eventually put a foot down. Like, you pay the guy what he's worth. Jordan, you know what you're getting with Jordan. You're not just getting the wins on the court. You're getting the marketing money. You're getting, you know, you have the league, the face of the league on your team.
All right, well, what do you think Verlander is? Verlander's not just some ho-hum pitcher.
All right, well, I'm saying when you think of major, when you think of the NBA back in the 90s, what's the first name that comes to your mind? Michael Jordan. When you look at Major League Baseball today, what's the first name that comes to your mind? It's not Justin Verlander. It's
that depends, dude. That may be for you, but that's not the majority. I think. With baseball, also remember, you got 9 different positions, so you got a more. You just can't quantify it like that. But to me, if you say right now, top 10 players in baseball, Verlander's on that list.
This is such a dicey conversation.
I agree with you in the answer. I don't think anyone is worth that much money. But at the same time, someone's going to give it to him. So, you know, if you could afford to do it, why not? Is my question.
Would you?
Would I do it? If I was building a team and I felt that he was the last piece that I needed to really do something, I would.
I tend to disagree with you on this. I just don't think at this point he is worse than, again.
Are you worried because you think the Yankees are going to give him this $20 million a year?
I think what we learned from Mr. Steinbrenner over the last couple of years, he's looking to not give anybody that money. I think they're looking to cut. They want to try and clean up the reputation of being the evil empire of Major League Baseball. They want to get past that. But it's here nor there on that. I think that we're forgetting the major important thing here is you gave Alex Rodriguez $25 million a year. And you think about the name value that A-Rod had at that time. Not right now. Now it looks like it's a total joke that we did that. At the time, you say, you know, you can't lose Alex. And he's worth, you know, at that time he was coming off an MVP season.
We're all in agreement. Listen, A-Rod was getting paid for all the stuff he did in the past. Most of it was not even with the Yankees.
As soon as I heard some of the stipulations of that contract, too, that he got, I just shook my head. Because I was like, how do you make that type of deal? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you make that type of deal with all these different, like, some of the incentives that they had in there? If he becomes, like, the greatest, you know, the most home run hitter at all time, which I think Bond's record might be safe now, if that's crazy enough. So a couple of years ago, I wouldn't have said that. I think now you can honestly say that Bonds' record is actually safe.
Yes. Listen, one more thing on baseball. I know you're going to get a kick out of this because every now and then, fans, you know me and Randy talk video game sports. One of my favorite games is MLB The Show. Now, Randy, I think you've played this a little bit, actually. Have you not?
Yeah, I played it. In fact, I just got last year's.
Okay.
Two days. 2 days ago.
Well, this year is coming out very soon, and we have now got an official team rating for each one. So we're not going to go through all of this. So I'm going to ask you this. Who's the best team? Where are the Yankees and Mets are at, and who's the worst team?
I think the worst team is probably the Kansas City Royals.
You're wrong on that, but okay. What do you think the Yankees are? From 1 to 30.
I think the Yankees are 12.
Close. 11. Where are the Mets?
24.
Close. 28.
Wow. I was closer with the Yankees than I was with the Mets. Wow.
So the worst team was not Kansas City. Actually, Kansas City was 19.
Really?
Yeah. I'm surprised you haven't gotten this. You don't know who the worst team is?
Who's I want to say the Boston Red Sox. But
no, not even close.
I want to say, I shouldn't remember who was as bad as they were last year. All right, hit me with it.
All right, the best team as far as the game is concerned is Detroit.
That doesn't surprise
me. Mets are 11th, Mets are 28th. The worst team rating-wise in the video game, Houston Astros.
Yeah, I can see that.
What I find really surprising about this, though, is that for some reason they got team defense in here. The Yankees are the best-rated team defense. I find that a little hard to believe considering they don't even have a catcher. <This one. laughs> What I'm more surprised at is that the New York Mets are the worst team defensively, according to the game. I guess they didn't see enough Miami Marlins games to know that Miami must have been the worst defense in all of baseball.
Well, okay. Yeah, I'll go with that. Real quick, let me go over real quickly some all the baseball news real quick that's been going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Reported by Yahoo Sports and ESPN.com. Obviously, like you were saying earlier in the day, Steven Strasburg gives up 2 runs in his spring debut. Mets, one thing you didn't bring up, Feliciano's out for 2 weeks with a heart issue with the Mets. I don't know if you knew that or not. I get a kick out of this whole Papelbon talking about the whole lack of leadership issues with the Phillies. Does Papelbon have anything to really talk about? The simple fact is he has not been relevant in 3 years? 4 years? I'm just saying, he was the hero, one of the heroes in the 2007 Red Sox World Series, but he hasn't been relevant in 5 years. So it makes me want to say, Mr. Papelbon, who are you? I'm going to say it like Jim Rome. Like, who are you? Like, really? In that type of situation, who are you to make any type of talk of leadership? So you have two World Series rings, and you don't lead anybody. You bolted from the Red Sox because you wanted more money, and they didn't give it to you. So
you know what? You know, as far as with Papelbon goes, I'm just really shocked that, you know, like, as we all were, how bad Philadelphia ended up being, although a lot of that probably had to do with the fact that Ryan Howard was out for so long and then Chase Utley had injury issues. This team is becoming just like the Yankees. They're going into that swing now where they're going to be bad for a while. You know, it happens. You're never good consecutively for so long. Even the Spurs, if you go to basketball real quick, you know, they were bad before they had David Robinson and then when Tim Duncan got in. You got to be bad eventually because that's the only way you get good. Look at the Nationals now. The Nationals had the best record in baseball last year. So you have to be bad to be good. So I don't understand why Papelbon is even getting into this whole thing. You know what? This is my biggest issue with athletes in general. You don't need to be led somewhere. Do your goddamn job, and I apologize for that, just do your job and don't worry about what else is going on. If you do your job, you should be fine. That's when push comes to shove. That's what it comes down to.
Well, here's another piece of news, by the way. Pirates and Contreras to a minor league deal. I just found that funny. Sorry. I just wanted to say it. Anyways, with that being said, and I totally agree with what you're saying here, you guys have to sort of do their job, do what they're supposed to be doing. I'm a firm believer, and this is where you think I'm absolutely nuts. I'm a firm believer right now of the young guys. Like, minor league baseball is such a great thing for me, because those are guys who are going to bust their, you know what, every single day. You know, we're sitting there having these conversations about overrated players because of the money they make. What about the guys who are not making, you know, half the scratch they're doing, a quarter of the scratch they're doing, and they're playing their hearts out? So that's just something to throw out there. Sorry about that. That was a little quick little rant on my part.
That's all right. It's fine.
It happens. Anyway, so we're moving forward here. Really, a lot of baseball news is so premature, and I think what we'll do is we'll go over to the NFL at this point with the combine. I got to tell you, start first. I had talked to a couple different people surrounding the New York Jets situation, and you and I have not really got as much Jets coverage as other people in other stations, other networks, other news sources, and it's because a lot of it is BS anyway. That's what it comes down to. You and I have had this argument in the past about the comparisons between the Giants and the Jets and what makes the Giants a different type of organization than the Jets and so on and so forth. I think they're setting Rex Ryan up this year. And I think they're setting up the Jets can come out and totally shock everybody and be 9-7, make the wild card spot and lose the first round, and then Rex Ryan keeps his job. I think if they even go 8-8, he keeps his job. But when you are having the type of offseason that you've been having, this is leading to a 3 or 4 win season coming up for the New York Jets. Can we agree or disagree?
I'm not sure. I need to see what happens, you know, with the offseason. But I don't know if I buy this setting up Rex Ryan. I don't see that. I think Woody Johnson loves Rex Ryan. I think Woody likes his Johnson. I think Woody likes his Ryan. I don't. That was premature, I know.
That was awful. If you want to yell at Jose, you don't yell at Jose about that. 760-283-0846. 760-0846.
I don't think Woody. I think Woody loves Ryan. I don't think this is a setup. I think if he wanted to, he would have gotten rid of him last year. I don't think this is anything other than. I really honestly think that if this team fails, it will be because of Ryan. I agree with you on that, but I don't think they're going to get rid of him. I think this team is going to be the way it's going to be as long as Rex Ryan is here.
You know what I would laugh about? Wouldn't you laugh if all of a sudden, after like going like 1-2 or 2-2, they give him a contract extension?
Would it be the first time? It happens in college all the time. And as far as we can tell, the Jet organization is being ran like a college, like a college dorm room. So why not?
Well, here's the other big thing that I found very interesting with the Jets. They're trying to convince Revis that they want him to stay. But at the same time, you're doing all this talking, saying, you know, we want to stay, but they're still shopping him. Because I know that for a fact, that they're still shopping him.
And they should shop him, because I think we both agree that they're not going to sign him.
No, they're not going to sign him, and I don't think he wants to sign now. I think as soon as he got with sitting there saying that they're shopping him around, I think he pretty much was sitting there saying, okay, well, if you guys are going to shop me, I don't want to be here. You know, why would I want to resign if you're just going to shop me anyway? You know, that could be a ploy also. The Jets can be sitting there saying, you know what, if you really want to stay here that badly, you sign. They'll sign him, and then they'll trade him anyway. So that's, you know, I know that's part of the their player, their CBA, that they can't really trade a guy after until a certain point. Just like the NBA has that in their CBA, the NFL has it in theirs.
But you agree that's the right thing to do, though, right? I think this is the right thing for them to do, is to
If you can trade your best player, listen, it happened a lot in the NBA. We saw where you trade your major guy and you got a bunch of other players. Look at the Denver Nuggets. Denver Nuggets traded Carmelo Anthony a couple years ago, got a lot back, and they're still a playoff team. In fact, they're top five in the Western Conference right now.
By the way, not to toot my own horn, but they're still top five with a bunch of players that everyone said that were garbage coming from the Knicks. I want to point that out.
Well, here's one part you sort of left out of that whole entire point of it, too. They also have a Hall of Fame coach in George Karl there. And George Karl,
let's not give George Karl that much credit. Come on.
Well, George Karl hasn't won a championship yet, so...
He's not that good. He does what he does, but it's always the players. Listen, when you win or lose, it's always the player. I don't blame coaches. It's the talent you have on the floor. To me, it's never the coach, especially in basketball where the inmates run the asylum.
I have to agree with that, too. I think that the inmates do run the asylum, and that, especially in the NBA. The other part of that also has to go with... If you're the Jets and you have an opportunity to get a quarterback, and you're like, I heard one deal that got nixed by the 49ers that the Jets were going to send Revis Sanchez and another player to be out there in San Francisco for Alex Smith, a couple players, and a draft pick. And they said they like the idea of Revis, but they don't want to trade one $8 million quarterback for another $8 million quarterback to sit on their bench. So
let's examine that for a second. All right. So if they don't trade... If they have no plans on trading Smith, or well, they're not going to release him, do they really think they're going to get someone to buy in on Smith at his price tag?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
they probably would find someone, but, you know, you're probably not going to get anyone better than Darrell Revis. So why wouldn't you do that deal?
Because it's not the fact of finding someone to take Alex Smith. You're taking Mark Sanchez back.
But you're never going to get a better player than Darrell Revis.
Again, they know that. But again, the price tag becomes too high. I think also a lot of it has to do with the draft pick amount that they were asking for.
I mean, let's face it. The reason why they lost that Super Bowl was because they couldn't cover a cold out there. I mean, they couldn't cover. They were exposed on their secondary. You have Darrell Revis to that defense. You're hard pressed to get anything on that defense. I think sometimes organizations, they overthink these things. I mean, listen, if you can't find anyone that's willing to really meet that price tag for Alex Smith, you know, I did not hear about this trade until you just brought it up. I don't know if I would have turned that trade down. I understand what you're saying about you don't want another $8 million quarterback. But, listen, if you can't find anyone to take Alex Smith anyway, because you're never going to be happy with every deal you get, you're actually getting more than dollar for dollar on that trade, in my opinion.
Let me ask you a question here, and this is a fair question. If you have the opportunity to trade Alex Smith, and maybe it's something a little bit more, because, you know, there's teams out there that are desperate that need a quarterback. Kansas City needs a quarterback. Arizona needs a quarterback. Buffalo needs a quarterback. You have an opportunity to possibly make a deal with one of those teams and get something else from them because, you know, they're desperate for a quarterback. Wouldn't you take it?
Well, again, is there anyone on those teams that has a better player to offer than Darrell Revis?
You might be able to you might be able to handicap them a little bit by sitting there saying it's like if you use Kansas City, you know, you're not going to obviously give up Jamal Charles for them. But you can use some leverage on their defense because they have a nice group of young players. Remember, you're also, by taking on Darrell Revis, you have to look at the financial aspects of it, too, you know, how much you're going to be paying them and how much of your cash could be used. Because if you're in San Francisco, you still have Vernon Davis. You still have the wide receiving core that cost you an arm and a leg. You have Frank Gore still that you're paying.
I still think, though, if you can get a guy, to me, that would almost guarantee you being at the Super Bowl again, because I think Darrell Revis in the – on a good team can do wonders for you. I'm just shocked that they nixed that deal. I understand the Sanchez thing. I understand that totally, but Sanchez is a guy that needs to change the scenery anyway. And I think going back to California would be good for him. Plus, you know you're not getting rid of Colin Kaepernick for him anyway. So there's not even going to be a quarterback controversy. It might actually bring out the best in Sanchez. Then you could have a problem that you know is really not a problem because you don't intend to start Sanchez. I just think to me, when you can get someone the caliber of Darrelle Revis, and you don't really have to give up that much to get him, because let's face it, Alex Smith for Darrelle Revis is still not a fair trade for the Jets.
Agreed. I'm a little confused with also the Niners thinking for even entertaining, or the Jets thinking for entertaining that deal. But the deal was on the table, and it was Knicks. So, speaking of Knicks, we were discussing a couple weeks ago about the New York Giants and their situation. A lot of talk was going on. You know, we have a good friend of our show, Chase Blackburn. Chase Blackburn, we had a conversation with him during the week, this past week, and we discussed what his contract status and what's going on with him and the rest of the Giants and what he was hearing. And from what we were gathering from him is the Giants are still in it to win it, but the Giants are just not planning on spending much money. They've never been a team to spend much money. A lot of their guys have walked away. But to the Giants' credit, to Jerry Reese's credit, a lot of the guys who they let walk away sometimes are rarely heard from again. Like, not much. They let Kevin Boss walk away, and they killed every Giants fan to watch him walk away, but we haven't heard much from him since then.
And you're right about that, and I know a lot of people in the media killed the Giants for letting him walk away, and he basically, you know, unfortunately because of injury, he's never really amounted to anything other than just being a nice tight end.
Yeah, like, so, you know, we have to remember those things too. So, like, I trust Jerry Reese to make the right decision. It brings back up to what we were saying about Victor Cruz. Where is the priority with Victor Cruz? Is it, like you've been saying, and I really thought about what you're saying, and I can't believe I'm saying this. It's like the Fonz admitting that he was wrong. I think you're right. I think we have to focus on Akeem Nix and get him settled up, and then you can take that route. Your running back situation too. From what I'm gathering, if the reports that ESPN is making are true, Michael Turner is going to be away from the Atlanta Falcons, and Steven Jackson is not planning on returning to the St. Louis Rams. So if you're the Giants, you might be able to get one of those guys for bargain price because they already got their money. They just want to win.
Let me ask you a question. If you're the GM, are you even investigating those two guys?
For the right price, yes.
Okay, I definitely can see that. You know, I will say this, and you can't say anything bad about Jerry Reese. The guy's got two Super Bowls in like a 6-7 year span. So there's nothing bad you can say about Jerry Reese. What I will bring up what I do have to question with Jerry Reese, and I think you will agree with me on this, is that while yes, they don't go crazy if they can't get a guy to fit into the salary cap structure, they get rid of them and the next guy comes up. But a lot of times, the guys that they have up there are not necessarily any better. And I think we also have to bring up the question when it comes to Jerry Reese's draft record is that he gets a lot of guys who tend to be diamonds in the rough who do not pan out. So, I mean, I think those are two fair, you know, knocks on Jerry Reese that you can make. You know, that his drafting, while he does hit some home runs, he also hits a lot of weak grounders to the pitcher. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. I agree with you 110%. There's been times where he's been brilliant. There's been times where he's been not so brilliant. I take a look. I liked the draft pick of David Wilson. I thought he's going to be a good player. He's just, you know, he's still learning the NFL game, and it's going to be interesting to see.
And at the very least, you got yourself a great kick returner.
Yeah.
If nothing else, you got that.
There was times where he was spectacular last year. Then I felt he got into that little slump. I think that's the fair way of saying it. You know, I think the grind of the NFL season. And also they said one of the reasons why the Giants, I don't want to say this, making this as an excuse to why they have the falters in November and December. But if you look at the practice level of the Giants, they practice full out every day. Whereas, you know, teams have a lot of walkthroughs on Thursdays and Fridays. Tom Coughlin doesn't do that. Maybe it's against his, you know, it's one of the problems that is Coughlin. that he always goes full out and doesn't let his guys sort of soak everything in. That's fine to a point. But when you go 100 miles per hour pedal to the metal all season long, it's going to have a wear and tear on your guys. And I think David Wilson hit that rookie wall because there was a couple of games in a row where he was just running back, and it was ridiculous. I think there was a 6 straight run backs that they were above the inside the other team's, on the other side of the team's 50.
That was the New Orleans game.
Yeah, it was the New Orleans game. Also the Philly game. The first Philly game of the year. It was like, okay, it's just, you know, it's ridiculous that they couldn't stop him. And it was, I think part of that was the shoddy special teams defense, but also was also his running ability and the blocking. And I also thought the Giants got very undisciplined towards the end of the year as far as their penalties were concerned. That Washington game was like the beginning of the end. That's where I thought the season ended for the Giants, was that Washington Redskins game.
That was the killer game, unfortunately. You're right about that. Let me just ask you this now, Randy, and then we should probably move on. But would you like to see how this team would play with a different coach, the same players?
Yes and no. I think that there's a different dynamic with Eli and Coughlin. I think Coughlin has a way of pushing some of these guys' buttons. I think there's only one other coach I can picture as the head coach of the Giants where Eli would respond the way he has. And I do believe that would be Bill Cowher. I think if you put Bill Cowher with this team, I think there's something different about Cowher. I think Cowher's act got tiring in Pittsburgh. But it was, remember, it wasn't Cowher who got fired. It was Cowher resigning. So they could have, he could still be in Pittsburgh. And, you know, we've all heard the story that Cowher doesn't want to go anywhere but the Giants. There's only a couple of short list of jobs that he would like to go to. This happens, all of them have to be 3 out of the 4 jobs that he wants to prepare in the NFC East. I do think at the end of the day that Eli Manning might not be as good as we all think he is, but he's still a very, very good quarterback.
Yes.
Okay, I think sometimes he gets a lot of, I'm thinking that he gets a lot of criticism from being the way he is because he looks lackadaisical, looks like he doesn't really care. But I think we want him to be like Peyton, where he's, you know, he wants that, because Peyton has that killer instinct in him, and we want to see that from Eli. Not that Eli doesn't have it, we just want to see him show emotion and do those same types of things that Peyton does.
I would just say this. If you want him to be like Peyton, then he would only have one Super Bowl ring and maybe not even have one, because then he would never be able to be Tom Brady.
Exactly. Good point. All right. So let's move forward. Just other news around the NFL. We had the combine going on right now as we speak. And we were discussing before we went on the air about just the amount of coverage that the combine is getting on how it's on TV. Years ago, this wasn't even thought of on TV. Yes, it's on the NFL Network, but do you like the idea that the combine's on television and people are able to watch
it? I love it. I love this stuff. I'm gonna tell you something. There's nothing more exhilarating than watching guys have to work a sweat just so they can prove that they should be drafted in the 5th round of the NFL draft. I love this stuff. I love how a guy that you never even heard of runs a 4.25 in the 40-yard dash, and now we're all talking about him possibly being a top 20 pick or a second rounder going from being even undraftable because he can run without football pads. Now, I'm being a little sarcastic there, but not fully sarcastic, because I do love watching this stuff. But there is something about this that screams, man, this is not football. This is not football at all.
I will say this.
I'm watching the 40-yard dashes right now, the wide receivers. To me, you should be wearing pads when you run this, because you can be fast and all-world when you don't have those pads on. But the minute you have pads on, there are guys who are slow but just run quicker when they're in the pads. Like, their speed does not budge, as opposed to a guy who runs a 4.25, and then when he puts the pads on, he's running a 4.6 or a 4.5, which is still pretty good, but not 4.2. So you know, I love watching it. There's a lot of intrigue in it. But I don't take too many of these things seriously. The one thing, like I said, I do love watching them run, but it's kind of just like, man, I wish they had the pads on at least. It would make it that much more interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I also, you know, obviously, our favorite friend from Notre Dame stole the show yesterday with his media coverage. Do you think he'll ever get past this hoax?
I believe eventually he will. Again, it's going to depend on how he performs, you know, when he starts his career. If he does not live up to what a lot of people thought he was going to be, then this will haunt him for the rest of his life. If he can perform admirably and, you know, be a good, solid NFL player, then this will never come up again.
Agreed. I also feel that the host needs to go to bed at this point.
It's so much fun.
I know it's so much fun for us as media members, but at the same time, I don't know. It's like now he's should be able just to focus on football. And I think, you know, when they were asking him what caused him to play badly at the Notre Dame, you know, at the
championship game?
In the championship game, you know, what are they expecting him to say, you know? Yeah, because of the girlfriend thing, I was all over the place. Do you think he's going to come out and actually say that?
A girlfriend screwed me over.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know what's funny so far about this whole thing with the hoax? I don't think that other sports leagues haven't had fun with this. The Dallas Stars put on their Jumbotron. You know, they show who's in attendance at the game. So they showed an empty seat saying, Vince Hale's girlfriend's in the arena.
That's messed up, man. That's messed up.
So,
I hope that the Cowboys don't draft this kid.
Oh, my God. He fit perfectly with the chaos, which is the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, God.
So let me ask you another question. Are you okay? We're going to transition out back to the National Basketball Association. Are you okay with what happened this week with the lack of trades or non-trades?
You know what? As a fan, I was disappointed because you always want to see like crazy things going on. Like you want to see big trades. We were talking about this before. We were talking about the fact that Josh Smith wasn't traded, Dwight Howard wasn't traded, and we both felt that they should have been traded. And I've always said to you that, to me, a lot of GMs don't like to make trades because they don't want to get scrutinized for making a deal because they know they're not going to get fair dollar-for-dollar value. But I've always been of the contention you will never get that fair value because when you're trading a chip like that, you're always going to kind of get shortchanged. So the point is not to necessarily get the fair market value, but to get close to fair market value that you can build on by adding other pieces, which is what I think the Hawks should have done with Josh Smith. And, you know, now what's going to end up happening is they might try to do a signing trade where you might even get less value per dollar. You know, instead of making 80 cents on the dollar in a deal now, in the off season, you might get 3 cents on the dollar. At the end, is it worth it?
Well, I also wanted to remind you that because of the new CBA, very difficult to do these sign and trade deals. You're going to have a very, very difficult time moving a guy like Josh Smith or moving a guy like Dwight Howard. It's going to be very, very difficult to do those types of things. And not only that, but now due to some of the new contracts, there's the second no trade clause added into a player's contract. Kobe Bryant was the first. Kevin Garnett was the second. And it's going to be very interesting. And also, one thing that nobody's really talking about, and I think if the Miami Heat get eliminated anywhere other than the NBA Finals this year, but one thing that nobody's talking about is LeBron James can opt out of his contract after this season.
Oh, no, we all know about it. Believe me, we all know about it. It's just that right now that's not a big deal. I think we all know it's going to happen. I honestly think LeBron James might end up back at Cleveland at some point.
I have a feeling it's going to be next year. I think next year he might be wearing Cleveland red and gold again.
Or I'll even take it a step further. there's only three teams I think LeBron James is ever going to play for. He's already played with Cleveland, and he played with Miami. I think the only other team that would be enticing enough for him to play with, I think, would be the New York Knicks.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say it.
Well, I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. He won a title in Miami, and that's all great, hunky-dory. We're kind of like, oh, yeah, you won. You finally won your title. You had to win. If he was to go to the Knicks and win a title with the Knicks, that title might actually trump any other title that has ever been won.
What about winning in Cleveland?
That would be nice, but it would not trump winning a title with the Knicks. That would be great for Cleveland. If LeBron James won a title in New York, and I'm specifically saying New York, I'm not saying Brooklyn, because I don't think that has any cachet to it. You win a title with New York, you get cachet, you are a basketball god. It might even, and I might be overblowing this.
I think you are.
But it might be more impressive than what Kobe Bryant has done. I think that's how big it is.
I'm going to ask you an honest question. Kobe Bryant's won 5 rings. Okay?
Yeah.
3 of those were Shaq.
Yeah.
I want you to think about Kobe Bryant's play in the two other rings. They were not good.
Well, they had to be good enough because they won.
Right, but I'm saying to you, think back to their last championship. Game 7, Kobe Bryant, and it's just not Kobe Bryant, but every Laker had a bad game. And it was just Pau Gasol and Ron Artest having good shooting days.
Well, let's hold that thought for a second.
I'm gonna pull up the stats right now for that.
What year was this again?
This was the 2010 NBA Finals.
Okay.
But I'll continue with this point. Okay, his last two championships, he was not obviously it was his team. But
wasn't he the finals MVP?
Of course they're going to give it to him.
Well, but no, I mean, they don't just rapidly give that to you. You know, if you deserve it, you know, you get it.
Here,
I'm actually looking at the box score.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, too. 83-79. Kobe Bryant, 23 points on 6 for 24 shooting. Okay, Meta World Peace, 7 for 18.
Yeah, and that was against a really good defensive team.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying to you is that he was not the deciding factor in those games.
Well, hold up. Hold on a second, though. Hold up. 6 for 24, yes, but 15 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 turnovers. You know,
11
rebounds
is
pretty big, though. 15 rebounds? That's only 3. Gasol only got 3 more, and that's what Gasol got paid to do.
And Bynum was banged up, too, at that point in time, too. I'm just looking at their bench. Lamar Odom put in for 7 points. I want to see game 6 as well. And then I also want to look at the year before when they played Orlando. That was his championship. You know what I mean? Like, that was the year he really excelled. And that was his championship. That last championship. And what I'm saying here is LeBron James going to Cleveland to a franchise that's never won a championship. Going back there, you know, he left there because at the end of the day, they just didn't have enough firepower to go compete with other teams. They have Kyrie Irving.
By the way, Kobe Bryant, 26 points, game 6, 11 rebounds, 9 for 19. That's, but for a guy that takes a lot of shots anyway, you know, you're not expecting 50%. 9 for 19, that's basically almost 50%. He makes one more, he's 10 for 20.
So moving
I think
forward.
You're a little harsh there. I think you're being a little harsh.
Probably. That's what they pay me to do. So moving forward with this. think at this time that if LeBron went to Cleveland, to his back home, first off, do you think the fans would welcome him back?
Yeah, because fans are fickle. I think they can get over it. I think everyone realizes why LeBron James did what he did. I think at the end of the day, people are just not happy with how he did it. But
I agree with that too.
And just remember, because he left, they got bad enough again where they can get a guy like Kyrie Irving, who might become one of the best point guards in the NBA.
Which now adds the question is, when his contract, his first contract, is he going to stay in Cleveland?
I think he will. See, like, as good as Kyrie Irving is, he's not a guy, right now, that's not a guy I think people are going to be gunning for right away. There's always going to be a team like, yeah, we have to go after this guy. But I think Kyrie Irving is the kind of guy that, unless he was going to a fantastic situation, you know, is he going to leave $30 million off the table? That's the question you got to ask with every player now. Are they going to leave that $30 million on the table to go somewhere else?
The same thing with Dwight Howard. Is Dwight Howard going to leave $30 million on the table to stay with the Lakers?
That's the intriguing one. That one I think is intriguing because I don't know what to think about Dwight Howard anymore. I just don't think he's that good. It's kind of the point. I don't think he's that good anymore.
I didn't think he was that good to start. We talk about overrated players.
I wouldn't go that far. There's a reason why everyone wants him. But I just don't think now he's that good. I think the injuries have taken their toll. I think beforehand he was worth all this crap, but it's just gotten so big. You know, somewhere in the dark alley, Stan Van Gundy is smiling his ass off right now.
And you know what the best part is? He and Stan still talk. That's the crazy part.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I don't feel bad for Stan Van Gundy. Oh, I didn't need to hear that, Randy.
They said that on NBC a couple of weeks ago. NBC.
I did not see that nor hear that. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear it now so I can still have that
feel. So you can still have respect for Stan.
Yes, I can still have respect for Stan. Oh, man. Okay. Well, dude, it's almost that time, man. It's getting close, man. We should do this overrated, underrated thing.
Let me really quickly give you my my opinion about the whole trade deadline. There was a lot of deals that we're talking about getting done, not getting done. Last minute things like Paul Pierce getting moved. There was a whole bunch of talk, obviously, about Josh Smith, and there was even talks about there was just a bunch of things that were probably just made up last minute to help make the day become more interesting. I think that at the end of the day, you got your two blockbuster trades. You had them early in the season with James Harden. And I think there was one other major big trade during the year this year.
The life of me, I can't think of it.
Me neither. So it couldn't have been that good. So I think at the end of the day, we want too much from all this. It's like J.J. Redick going to the Milwaukee is not exactly the blockbuster deal. But we've had those years where we haven't had those blockbuster deals. So it shouldn't be.
Wasn't that the biggest trade?
Yeah, that was the biggest trade. And if you look at the NBA standings, a lot of teams are pretty much, like, you know who your top-tier teams are, and then you know who the teams are who are rebuilding. Then there's those teams in the middle who have to really look at their teams and look at their cores and say, is this the team that's really going to eventually lead us to the promised land? Miami is, I think, the most fragile team in the NBA right now. Because, again, you have LeBron, who's, what's he going to do at the end of the year? And that question is going to be brought up. And especially if they lose, and if they don't even make the finals, that's going to be brought up. And that's going to be brought up real often, as quickly as possible. If you look at the West, there's a lot of teams that should have been sellers that were not. I thought the Utah Jazz should have been sellers. I think the team that deserves the biggest A-plus for getting younger, getting quicker, and getting better for the future is the Houston Rockets. I really like all the moves that the Rockets have been making. You look around the rest of the NBA, Phoenix didn't really get themselves better. Sacramento was cleaning up their salary because they're getting ready to move to Seattle. I think New Orleans is the closest thing now to the next OKC, because they have so much young guys, so many young guys, and so much young talent that they're going to get really good really soon. I think within the next two seasons, New Orleans will be back in the playoffs. Agree or disagree on that one? Possibly.
I definitely see something there.
Minnesota Timberwolves, that's the team that has been ravaged with injuries this year. I think next year, you know, think about it, they got another top 10 pick this year. That team's going to be really, really dangerous for next season. Portland, I think.
Is David Kahn still running this team?
I'm sorry?
Is David Kahn still running the team?
I believe so.
You know, just real fast. Has there ever been a guy who's done more damage for a whole bunch of other teams other than his own than David Kahn? I mean, what team has six point guards on this roster?
It's a good question, my friend.
We should move on from that. I'm mad about the Johnny Flynn thing.
Portland has been playing as good as anyone pitched them to be. They lost their last seven. Before they went on this losing streak, they were two games above. Dallas is playing significantly better. They're still out of the playoff line. And then you have the Lakers, who are on the way out, they're on the outside looking in. Everybody else, then you have the top eight: Houston, Utah, Golden State, Denver, Memphis, Clippers, OKC, and then San Antonio. The hottest team in the West right now being the Memphis Grizzlies. Jose, I'm telling you right now, Golden State is coming back down to reality.
I still think they'll make the playoffs.
I think they'll make the playoffs. I think they're going to be a 7-8 seed. I don't think they're going to be a 6 seed. I think Utah will be the odd team out of that mix. I think Houston bought themselves into the playoffs by signing Jeremy Lin and getting James Harden.
I'm still not sold on Houston, and I'll say this right now. If you think Jeremy Lin is going to do anything for you in the playoffs, I'm going to question his heart. The guy didn't play last year when they could have used him, and we all know, you get any kind of pressure on that kid, he's not that good. So I'm not sold on that yet. I need to see him actually get out of the first round.
That's fair. Now, here's a question for you in the Eastern Conference. Milwaukee's in the eighth spot. I'm going to name you three teams right now. You tell me if any of these three teams can put a string of wins together to take Milwaukee out of the last spot. I'll say you say yes or no. Cleveland.
Okay. No.
Detroit.
No.
Philadelphia.
I think they could.
Toronto.
I actually think they will.
Okay. I was thinking the exact same thing. That's why I jumped over Toronto all to do the last.
I actually think that trade for Rudy Gay, I think that's the trade you were probably thinking of. Rudy Gay trade. I think that trade might have saved that franchise.
I also think that the Detroit Pistons have actually been playing better because they have so many young guys, they have to win.
Yeah, that's the only thing with Detroit. They have to, but they might have the steal of that draft from last year, which is Andre Drummond, who has progressed a lot nicer than I thought he would.
Yeah, I agree. And now, as far as the actual top eight of the East goes, Miami has got a good handle, 5.5 game lead. The Knicks have now dropped to 3. Lost 4 in a row. The Indiana Pacers won 4 in a row. They're number 2. Brooklyn's at number 4, only a game back from New York. And Chicago's is a game and a half back in the 5 spot. And then, you know, Atlanta's 2 games back. And then Boston's a good 4.5 games back.
For me, if you're the Knicks, what you want to do is just stay in that top 3. You don't want to get in that 4-5 range because you're going to end up with a hard first-round matchup. To me, you just want to get in the top 3 so you have home court. You'll work what you got to work out on. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm starting to think that it's no sheer coincidence that since Shumpert and Stoudemire came back, who are both represented by the same Happy Walters in agency, that's when this team has gone a little south. It's a little cringeworthy for me as a Knicks fan to also learn that the team was 16-4 in games that Rasheed Wallace was in. So that scares me a little bit that Rasheed Wallace might have had a bigger impact than any of us would have even had hoped that he could have had.
I'm not giving up
on this season yet, but I am now starting to see that maybe the Knicks should have been a little bit more active in the trade during the trade deadline than they were. Maybe getting rid of Shumpert, maybe getting rid of Stoudemire, if not both. But after this year, if things don't progress well for this team, and as a Knicks fan, you got to get out of the first round this year. Otherwise, you got to blow this whole thing up.
But here's the real factor, and this is where you and I, I know, will disagree and fight to the end of the days. I think you have a big problem when your big three, Carmelo Anthony, J.R. Smith, and Amar Stoudemire can't be on the floor together at the same time.
It's unfortunate. I don't believe in that sort of thing. I think you have to always make those things work, but, you know, the numbers don't lie, unfortunately. And at some point, I really think what the issue comes down to is that I just think the Knicks management does not want to deal Stoudemire, not necessarily because they would have a hard time dealing him, because, I mean, that's another issue entirely. I think they just feel they owe it to him.
Well, yeah.
To not get rid of him. You know, so...
it's part of the problem. I think that's actually a major part of the problem. I also think...
They need to get over that. You know, if you can get a deal for him... Listen, you can't say you're not going to get fair market value with Amari Stoudemire, because anyone who gets him is not going to get fair market value either. So the point of the matter is that, you know, right now, if you can trade him and get something of value, just do it.
Your problem with the Knicks is also everybody else's problem with the Knicks. And that problem at this point in time is going to be their age. Right now they're starting to show their age a little bit.
Yeah, well, to me, the bigger problem is the lack of defensive intensity. That's my bigger issue with the team. But we can probably discuss this another time. Right now, to me, it's just the defensive intensity is not where it's at. And unfortunately, again, this coincides with the fact of Stoudemire and Shumpert coming back. I'm surprised it's been an issue with Shumpert, but I just don't think Shumpert's ready to play this year. I think they should just give him the year off. But we'll see what happens.
Okay, I'm going to ask you an honest question. I'm going to say the next five games, you tell me what the record's going to be. Actually, we'll do 10 games. So make it a fair even amount, okay? And then we'll move forward. Because I know we got to get to this list and we got to get out of here. Okay. Here's the next 10 games for the New York Knicks.
All right.
At home against Philadelphia today.
When?
Hosting Golden State on Wednesday.
Loss. Wait. Hosting?
Hosting.
No, when?
At Washington.
I'm going to give them a win, but that's going to be a tough one.
Hosting the Miami Heat on Sunday next week.
That's going to be a loss.
At the Cleveland Cavaliers.
That will be a loss.
At the Detroit Pistons.
That's going to be a win.
Hosting the Oklahoma City Thunder.
That's a loss.
Okay, and hosting the Utah Jazz.
Win.
Okay, so you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then they start a road trip. So then they start a road trip on March 11th against the Golden State Warriors. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4. And did you say that win or loss against the Thunder?
Loss against the Thunder.
Okay.
I think so I have them going 7 and 3.
So you have 1, 2, 3, 4. You have them go 5 and 4.
5 and 4?
Yeah, 5 and 4.
I would say this. If you're a Knicks fan, if they can split the Oklahoma-Miami games, you would take that.
Well, the thing is now, you also have to look at what's going on now with Brooklyn, because Brooklyn is not too far off.
I can't worry about Brooklyn, though. That's the thing. At this point, I know you want to win the division, but all I'm concerned about is keeping a top four seed. That's all I'm concerned about. I think that's part of the problem when it comes with the Knicks and the Nets. Everyone is so concerned with what the other team is doing. Just worry about what you got to do. I don't concern myself with the Nets. And the Nets should concern themselves with the Knicks. Just do what you got to do.
Yes or no, Kenyon Martin's going to be a help to them.
I think he'll be a help.
Okay. let's go over this list. What do you have about 5 or 10 on your list for most overrated?
I have a couple people. You know, I wish we could have hit on this a little longer, but we have a few. Who do you have on your list?
Okay, I think number. Are we talking about right now? We're talking about active players or all time?
Whatever you want to do. If you want to do all time, I think it all fits into the same equation.
Okay, I think Dwight Howard is one of the most overrated athletes in the NBA.
That's rough, man.
and I'm telling you why. I'm being honest. When I say this to you, and I think once you hear my point, you'll make an argument that I'm right. When you come in the league at the age of 19 years old, and you end up having one of the best offensive big men as your personal center's coach, and you still can't develop any type of real offensive game, after a while, you can blame the coach all you want, but then maybe some of it's on you, too, when you're getting a lot of fair criticism around the NBA. Maybe some of it's just not you. So I have a real problem with Dwight Howard. The next one, as far as the NBA is concerned, and this is me attacking one of my own, I've really never written, you've heard me say this, I've really never been a huge Deron Williams fan, especially since I came from a time where I'm used to having my point guard be a very big pass-first point guard. So I don't think Deron Williams is right up there. As far as, I'm going to switch over to the NFL, as far as overrated. Man, I got to tell you, maybe it's just because he had a really, really, really... I'm not going to put Aaron Rodgers in this category because I remember how I always told you guys, I think we always judge him on his potential instead of what he can do. But I really felt that Mark Sanchez was given an overrated tag for me this year because there was a lot of hype on how good of a quarterback they always made him out to seem to be. Same thing with guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick. I just didn't see it. And I even put – you're going to kick my tail for saying this.
I'm going to kick your tail after you're done talking, but go on.
I'm also going to say right now, and this is where I'm going to get beat up from you, maybe because he just didn't have a quarterback this year. I just didn't believe all the hype of Larry Fitzgerald.
You're going to catch an ass with him later.
Yeah, I'm just saying that one just got to rise out of you. And then Tony Romo, of course. I don't see why everybody believes in Tony Romo, as far as you're.
All right. I'm going to say this. Of all the guys you have on your list, all those guys are not overrated, with the possible exception of Tony Romo. The rest of those guys, you said Sanchez? All right. I don't think Sanchez you can count as overrated because I don't think a lot of us really thought he was that good to begin with. But since he got drafted high, then yes, overrated. But other than that, the rest of your list is overrated.
That's funny.
Here is my list. And it's more of an overhyped than overrated, but I'm going to go on different sports. One of my most overrated athletes of all time is Danica Patrick. And if you follow NASCAR or Formula One, you know exactly what the hell I'm talking about. Has someone ever made more money off a sport that has accomplished so little? And if you don't know what I'm talking about, one race. That's how many she has won. That means she's actually ahead of me and Randy by a grand total of one.
One.
So that's all you need to know about that. Another guy, in my opinion, that is overrated, and this is a guy that both me and Randy love and love to hate, and I'm going to go a little old school here, is Stephon Marbury. Guy who had a lot of talent and a lot of potential. Never really lived up to the hype and to the potential that he could have had. Definitely one of the most overrated athletes out there. Another guy that comes to mind, Randy, you may not be familiar with this guy. I'm not sure, so I don't want to put words in your mouth. But do you remember Ryan Thompson?
Yes.
If, for those who don't know, Ryan Thompson was the guy that the Mets got in the what is now infamous David Cohn trade that netted them both Ryan Thompson and Jeff Kent. Now, while Jeff Kent was a serviceable player for the Mets, as I can talk, he didn't become the MVP caliber player he ended up becoming until he went to San Francisco. Ryan Thompson was actually the big chip of that deal. All Ryan Thompson ever did was hit home runs in batting practice. He never did anything on the field for the Mets and was basically let go a couple of years later. One of the most overrated players in the history of the game as far as this area is concerned. There's always a lot of guys that you always put that tag on, but for me, Ryan Thompson, because of what we gave up, you know, in a time where the Mets were trying to rebuild, this stumbling block ended up being a complete disaster and sending the Mets back even further. So those are my three. You know, the other guys that come to mind, obviously, you know, Jamarcus Russell, Brian Bosworth, you know, those guys in the NFL, overrated guys that never managed to do much. Russell's actually trying to come back, and he's a little under 300 pounds, so maybe he can get a read option job somewhere in the NFL. Who knows?
Or maybe he can hold the coach's clipboard.
Exactly. I'm not going to put Tim Tebow on my list, and the reason why I'm not going to do it is because, to me, I don't think Tim Tebow has ever been overrated. I think people just put too many assumptions and without seeing what's really going on. So I don't think it's fair to say that Tim Tebow's overrated, because all you ever want your player to do is win games, and that's all Tebow has done. The other people on this list don't really win or never really won, so that's why Tim Tebow's not on my list.
Okay. I think Tebow, you can't call him overrated or underrated because he didn't get to play this year. So,
yeah, but I'm just talking about in general, just for his career. I'm just, you know, bringing all that up.
When he played, they actually played. When he got to play with Denver, he actually played well. So,
yeah. So your list sucks. My list rocks. So, you know.
did you find any of the members of the Dream Team besides Christian Leiter overrated?
I'm gonna get beat for this. I've never been a big fan of John Stockton.
Really?
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of his. By the way, you know what else is overrated? Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley's importance as far as coverage on TNT and basketball goes. That is completely overrated.
There's their relevance. I agree with you to a point on that. I think that they had the biggest mouth during the All-Star weekend. And the problem is, I don't think it got noticed by the NBA.
Let me ask you a question. Are they going to do something to them? Is the NBA going to tell them, you know, hey, you know, you need to shut up?
Let me ask you a question. Have they done anything to, Jeff Van Gundy for all the criticism that he's had?
Well, yeah, but he's a coach. You know, he's actually employed by a team in the NBA. I don't technically know if what Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal does is in the ramifications of what the league does.
Jeff Van Gundy's not employed by the NBA from a team right now.
No, but when he was. I'm saying when he was. Has he ever said anything now?
Yeah, if you ever listen to him, he criticizes the officials, he criticizes the NBA during live ESPN and ABC telecasts.
See, I don't listen to the ESPN broadcast, so. Did you get in trouble for it?
Never. And the same thing with...
Never? Well, there's your problem right there. I guess that's why they didn't want to bring Stan Van Gundy into ESPN, because he would just go crazy.
Yeah, I think if they both... Can you imagine the Van Gundy brothers sitting there doing courtside commentary together? Yeah. They'll be calling Laker games. As Kobe passes to the player that will remain nameless, right, Stan?
Oh, God. Well,
awesome.
Yeah. Well, dude, I think it's about that time, man.
All right, well, sound it off. Go ahead. Let's hear what you have to say.
Well, I really have not much to say. Drab weekend. I'm glad I'm back. Unfortunately, though, I may not be here much longer, guys. So due to needs of the family and whatnot. So all I want to say is I've enjoyed my time here, and as long as I am able to do the show, I will, but there's going to be a time, unfortunately, where Randy will have to find a new host. So maybe we'll have a contest for you to come on and do it. So just be prepared, because there's a lot of yelling at Randy you're going to have to do.
I know. You have to be a real special person to deal with my crap. Anyway, real quick, my final word of the day here is going to be very, very simple. The NBA All-Star and trade deadline, again, I think was probably one of the, I don't want to say black eye, but probably the most underwhelming time for the NBA this year. this season has been very, very flat, and I think anything short of upsetting the Miami Heat and knocking them out of the playoffs, I think Miami is still a very hated team in the NBA, and people want to see them lose. Until that happens, this NBA season can be considered somewhat of a bust.
Mm.
With that being said, Mr. Padilla, till next week, same bad channel, same bad channel.
Do our best, dude. Everyone have a great weekend. Take care. Enjoy the Daytona 500 and Oscars if you're into that sort of thing.
Wait, say your sign-off line.
Take it deep.